love you. But I wanna know for sure. Come on, hold me tight.
Good morning. Remember the Trogs? I had to ask Ed. I forgot the Trogs, but I remember the song, Wild Thing. So good morning. Welcome to Freedom Orcs, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy. We are back after the Labor Day. We thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday, September the 7th now. Along with Big Ed, we got a lot going on. We're going to be talking in a few minutes with Jonathan Butcher of the Heritage Foundation about the Supreme Court's decision that allows public funds for religious schools. It should close the book on that thing, on that discussion. So stay tuned for that. Also, a Florida judge has okayed what's called a special master to look over the documents taken from Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home. It's a move that foils, at least for now, it foils the Justice Department. That we are going to discuss it. And a new Gallup poll showing Americans are less satisfied with the educational system these days. We are going to try to find out why that is. And we got a very interesting top 10 for you in our ultimate top 10. The top 10 most stressful commutes in the U.S. Where do you think they might be when you're in your car? So stay tuned for that. By the way, do not forget to listen to Senior Voice America every Monday through Friday, just prior to our show, by the way, with Tim Bryce and company. Great show, huh? It's right here on the Tantalk Radio Network. Senior Voice America. All right. So, what's going on these days? Hey, we finally launched another missile to show that we still have some sort of capability. The U.S. Air Force launched an unarmed Minuteman III ICBM. That's an intercontinental ballistic missile. It was tested in California. I guess it's a way of showing, flexing our muscle, maybe. A show of nuclear readiness. It went from the Vandenberg Space Force Base in California. That's just a little bit north of San Francisco, about 60 miles north of Santa Barbara. They're saying it has nothing to do with the situation right now. But there are concerns over nuclear security because of what's going on, of course, in the Ukraine with Russia. Russia's not only threatened to up the war there and even resort to nuclear escalation if necessary, especially if the U.S. becomes more directly involved in the war. I guess they're threatening to, they say the N-word, nuclear. And they got that thing going on near the power plant. You know that there's lots of technology that goes on in the Ukraine. I didn't realize it until this war started, but they got that power plant. It's repeatedly been threatened by shelling from Russia. What happens if that thing gets hit? And back to the Air Force, they have conducted over 300 ICBM tests. Last month in August. But they say it has nothing to do with the current events. It has everything to do with what's going on these days, I would think. Anyway, you've heard about this special master, right? They've been talking about whether or not Donald Trump deserves an outside source to look at what's going on with that search by the Justice Department of his Mar-a-Lago home. Well, a federal judge Monday agreed to appoint this special master to look over the records. Now, the FBI has already been going through these records. We know that. It's been, what, a month? So we know that they've looked over a great deal of it. But this is going to put a hold on this whole thing. And if you believe in conspiracies, then the idea that the Justice Department, which is a wing or under the authority of the executive department, which is, of course, run by Joe Biden and company, if you believe that they intentionally set a look at this thing to screw Donald Trump up and to affect these November elections, these off-year elections, this is going to delay any kind of additional information, you might say, about what has been discovered. And this is a woman, Judge Eileen Cannon, and in her ruling, she has granted Donald Trump's request for the special master. This is an independent third-party person who is sometimes assigned in sensitive cases to look over materials that could be covered by attorney-client privilege. In other words, the FBI and the Justice Department has no right to inspect anything that goes on between a lawyer and his client. That's just not right. That's an invasion of privacy. So we'll see where all of that goes. But for sure, what it's going to do is it's going to slow down the Justice Department's look-see at the Donald Trump records. A lot of people are saying, why did Donald Trump bring any of that stuff home? I don't know, you know, but I don't think there's anything spurious about it. I really don't. I think that they carted, first of all, he wasn't in there looking over all the documents as they were pulling them out of the file cabinets.
Do you think when a president is done with his term, he should just wipe his hands and go off into the wild blue yonder? Or should that president maybe stay informed, God forbid something catastrophic happens, to where he can be a helpful hand in the situation?
Yeah, I think you're right on the latter. And, you know, it's like when you're clearing out your house and you're moving somewhere else. You know darn well in the whole process, especially in the White House, that something like this is going to happen. You got your own papers. You got your own office. Think about it. You got all of these different emails that you've done. It's going to happen.
I mean, we trusted him for 4 years with the keys to the country.
Right.
You telling me now we don't trust him with papers?
You got these people thinking he's intentionally taking the nuclear code and he's going to conspire with Russia.
Yeah.
Come on. We got past that whole Russia thing, I thought, a long time ago when they couldn't come up with anything. But they got these people believing that somehow he's nefarious. You know, he's done this because he wants to hurt the country. And that just, that rings hollow to me. It rings hollow. Now, this woman that is the judge is indeed, it was a Trump appointee, and indeed, there could be the fact that she has a little conservative in her that she decided. But I'm looking at what she said, and all she said was, hey, let's just give them a chance to, a third party, a chance to take a look. I don't see how that hurts either side.
Someone who's not pre-biased to the Democratic Party, what a nice change of pace.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Anyway, I cannot wait to talk with Jonathan Butcher of the Heritage Foundation. We got a lot of things going on with the quality of our schooling system right now, including this Gallup poll that I alluded to a little bit earlier. So let us take our break. And when we come back, Jonathan Butcher and the Supreme Court's decision to allow public funding for religious schools.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on The Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets, from animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network. Ain't it good to...
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Wednesday. We thank you so very much for listening, and we're delighted to have back Jonathan Butcher, who is a Will Skillman Fellow in Education at the Heritage Foundation, and he has written a piece for Heritage, along with Sarah Perry, about a decision of the Supreme Court. I think it's Carson versus Macon. It says, with Carson versus Macon, the Supreme Court closed the book on religious discrimination in school choice. Jonathan, welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Yes, indeed. I think this is such a timely article. Tell us a little bit about this decision, Carson versus Macon, and what it portends, if you would.
Sure. We wanted to give parents some understanding of what happened at the Supreme Court this past spring, especially going into the next legislative session, right? State lawmakers are going to be going back to work in January and February in most states. And a number of them have already signaled that they are interested in creating more learning options for K-12 students, okay? So the significance of Carson v. Macon is that the court ruled that Washington cannot discriminate against religious institutions or individuals who want to practice religion. And so what that means is if you have a program, as they did and as they do, in Maine that allows a family to choose a private school, they cannot discriminate, they being public officials, against a religious school just because it's religious. And so this is a great win, protecting the idea, right, that government must be neutral on religious issues and they can't discriminate just because an entity is religious.
So, Jonathan, let me get this straight. If I want to send my child to a religious school, I guess this would be anywhere, I can use public funding in some way to, what, purchase books? Or how does the allowance of public funding work for, say, a parent that wants to send their child to a private religious school?
So that's a great question. There are about half of all U.S. states have some sort of private school choice scholarship program. So in 10 states around the U.S., they have what are known as education savings accounts, where the state deposits a portion of a child's spending from the school funding formula into a private account that parents use to buy education products and services, including private school tuition. Maine's situation, so in the state of Maine, was a little different. They actually had a program that's about a century old because they don't have assigned public schools in every town, especially in some of the more rural areas in the northern part of the state. And so what the state said was that parents could send their children to private schools and the state would provide scholarships for that because there was no assigned school, right? This was an effort in this what's known as town tuitioning to allow families, right, to find an education for their children, even if there wasn't an assigned public school, okay? Well, what happened in Maine was that state officials said, well, you can choose a private school, but you cannot choose a religious school that actually teaches religion and makes it a part of their curriculum and a part of the school's mission. And so families rightfully filed a lawsuit and said, look, this is discriminating against religion. And so the significance of this ruling in Carson v. Macon and why it applies to other states is that it says that if there's a scholarship program, for example, that's readily available, right, it's open to anyone who applies, if a family chooses a religious school, the state cannot prevent that family from choosing a religious school just because it's religious. And that this is, I know it sort of sounds like a minor detail, but it's actually really significant. There have been a number of cases in recent years, including Trinity Lutheran versus Missouri, as well as the Espinoza case up in Montana, where there have been similar situations where the states had said, you cannot use public taxpayer spending at all on or for a religious purpose, And the court has ruled no. If a family is making the choice on their own, if they're not being compelled, then it is the family's choice. It is the individual's choice of how that money is being used. And therefore, it's not establishing religion. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're getting at here, is that these rulings are saying appropriately that you cannot establish religion with public funds. You can use it by your own choice, and you cannot be discriminated against if you choose a religious purpose. But it also protects this idea that government can be and must be neutral and not discriminate against religious causes.
Indeed. We're talking with Jonathan Butcher of the Heritage Foundation. He's a Will Skillman Fellow in education there, knows a lot about what is going on. You know, there's such a crazy quilt patchwork of different laws on the books regarding which states, you know, are allowing school choice, and then there are some apparently that are not allowing as much. Do all states right now, all states have some sort of a school choice program that allows some sort of a funding mechanism, Jonathan, or are there still some states that absolutely forbid it?
So that's a great question. So there are about 44 states in Washington, D.C. that allow the creation of charter schools, which are public schools formed by parents, teachers, and local community leaders. And these are public schools of choice. So not every state allows for charter schools, but almost. All 50 states allow families to homeschool. And then about half of the states in the U.S. have some sort of private school scholarship program. Now, these vary from one to another, but sometimes, so let's take Arizona, for example. In Arizona, they have a private school scholarship program that allows families to choose a private school. They also have an education savings account program that allows families to pay for personal tutors, educational therapists, textbooks, as well as private school tuition. Florida has a similar situation where they have several private school options, including education savings accounts. And then, you know, you can look at another state like, say, Minnesota. So Minnesota has a charter school law but does not have a private school scholarship option. So you're right. I mean, it really does kind of vary state to state. I would say, though, it's going to be worth watching what happens in Texas next year. Obviously, Texas is a large state, has a significant population, and the governor has signaled that he really wants state lawmakers to consider more private learning options for students. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Indeed. You know, and we go back to the First Amendment, where we talk about, you know, it's the first in the Bill of Rights, and we talk about freedom of religion. It's not freedom from religion, necessarily. It's freedom of religion, but you can be free to not be religious, of course. But so many people get so uptight about the idea that the government can send money to a private or a religious school. It just drives them crazy. And I often wonder why they are so concerned about it. Have you ever thought about it that way? It's kind of interesting. What is the motivation for people to try and stop private school funding? If a parent wants to take their child to a non-public school, is it a fear of losing control, or is it a fear of losing money for public schools? Do you have any thought on that at all, Jonathan?
Well, you know, obviously hard to see inside someone else's head, but I would suggest this. Those special interest groups like teacher unions are most certainly trying to maintain their control over the public school system. I mean, they have a ready-made political advocacy group that in the form of teachers who can go on strike, right, and shut schools down. It's happening in Seattle right now. It happened in Columbus, Ohio just a few weeks ago. So I think when it comes to special interest groups, they are trying to preserve their power. I think that there may be some who say, well, look, if we allow for private education options, that will mean that students will not be able to go to assigned public schools anymore, and we won't have schools for everyone. And that's simply nonsense. There has never been a situation where a school choice option or a parent learning option has been created And there has been such an exodus from assigned schools that public schools have closed. I mean, look, public schools open regularly every August or September, unless there's a pandemic, and that, of course, throws things off. But normally, right, public schools mm-hmm. open their doors regardless of whether they're charter schools or education savings accounts or any other options that are open.
Mm-hmm. You know, it just seems like now there is the parents are becoming more involved, at least it seems like it, in these school board meetings. They are becoming more concerned about the curriculum. They are definitely increasing the likelihood of pulling children out of a public school and moving towards a private school. It seems like the private schools, because they're untethered to all the regulations that public schools must endure, that they are freer to give, I don't know, a more quality education. It seems like private schools typically give a better education, a more rounded education. And I think it's been that way for a long time. But even more so these days. And it seems to go along with that freedom from the government and its regulations. You know, the quality of the school seems to increase the less the government oversees it. You know what I mean?
Well, I think today it's important for parents to watch what's happening in public or private schools. I think the fact is that families have been debating about curriculum and what's taught in public schools really since the beginning of the assigned school system in the U.S. I think what's happening now is that parents are strongly resisting a radical agenda being pushed by racial activists and so-called gender activists. And because these radical groups are so surprised that people would actually, you know, disagree with the idea of racial discrimination through critical race theory, or, you know, that people actually disagree that schools should keep secrets from parents about a child's, you know, confusion over their sexuality, that's why it's made headlines, right? The mainstream media is sort of reporting that, wow, imagine that. Parents really think it could be harmful if a minor age child wants to assume a different gender.
Florida.
It's
been a huge issue here with all of that. They've specifically come up with legislation, the governor and the legislature in Florida, that will not allow, you know, these sexual gender issues to even be discussed in just grades K through 3. They wanted to, you know, bring these kind of sexual gender-oriented discussions to kids that can barely find their way to the school itself without, you know, the parents. It's just kind of a scary thing. And you can see how parents are all of a sudden, you know, you get to a certain point and apathy stops. It seems like, you know, we over the years are very apathetic about what's going on in the schools. I mean, how many parents actually go and, you know, sit in on a kid's class? They don't. But now, it seems to be going the other way. There's more involvement. I think it's a good thing. The Supreme Court seems to, at least the makeup of the Supreme Court right now, seems to be one of a kind of a protective coding over education to some extent. Your thought on that?
Well, I think it's great that parents show involvement, and they should be, right? I mean, look, school boards belong to the parents that elected those members there, right? It's the place where communities should be able to go and express their opinions about what's happening in a child's school. I mean, look, these students are being prepared to be community leaders for the next generation. So I think parents should be encouraged and empowered to be a part of their child's education through, you know, the decisions that school boards make about teaching or any other policy.
It's become such a big issue. I cannot remember when this issue of education and the quality of the education has become so important as it is right now. Jonathan, it is always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so very much, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you.
All right, sir. Jonathan Butcher, Heritage Foundation. All right. We're going to take our break. When we come back, and speaking of education, a new Gallup poll showing Americans are less satisfied with the educational system these days. We are going to try to find out why.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, this is Steve Vaccaro, psychologist and host of the Chapters Wrap Live. Each live show will bring on top-notch guests from the nonprofit world. We are the advocacy show that provides a platform for other advocates. So please tune in on your drive home from work to share your voice. The Chapters Wrap, where unity and diversity meet one chapter at a time.
Listen to Kicking Unhealthy Relationships to the Curb at 5, Voices for Change at 6, Reach Out with Ray and Steve at 7, and the Chapters Wrap at 8, Wednesdays, here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
What's the buzz in Tampa Bay? Senior Voice America Radio, a unique morning variety program delivering the latest commentary on politics by host and political analyst Tim Bryce and the up-to-minute happenings of Wall Street. Beyond politics and finance, they scale the scholar's rampart by including topics on religion and nutrition with thought-provoking guests and interviews. Tune in every weekday from 8 to 10 a.m. on this Tan Talk station. Senior Voice America, serving our nation's seasoned citizens for over four decades.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back. Thank you so very much for being with us here on Freedom Works. So we've been talking a little bit about education here in the last few minutes. A new Gallup poll is out. It shows that Americans are becoming less satisfied with the state of kindergarten through grade school and high school education. And only 42% of Americans, only 42% say they are completely or somewhat satisfied with the education of the kids through high school. Now, for comparison, 3 years ago, it was 51%. 51%, so it's a 9% drop. Speaking of that, only 9% said they are completely satisfied with the education of students. Of those dissatisfied, 65% said they were upset with the curriculum and the educational standards, 65% of them. 28% of them mentioned a lack of resources. 17% mentioned political concern. Now, interestingly, even though overall there's concern about the quality of education, most parents who have kids in school through high school are satisfied with their own kids' education. 80% said they are completely or somewhat satisfied with their own kids' education. Now, that's kind of interesting. It's like when you vote your politician back in who's been in forever. But then you scream about wishing that you had term limits for everybody else, you know? Now, much of the dissatisfaction is driven by Republicans in this survey. Satisfaction with Republicans has plummeted to 30%. 30%. That's very scary. 30% are satisfied with the quality of education. Democrats, 51%. That's not that great either. That's not that great either. My God, if you had done a survey like this back in the 70s maybe, or even in the 60s, I bet you would have found that about 80% of the people overall were satisfied with the education. Now, why has it changed so much? Why is it? Well, I think it's because of the fact that back then there was less political bias. Really, I think we were just a little bit more innocent back then when we were teaching. We didn't have this goal of inculcating. We remembered that the purpose of education is not telling people what to think, but how to think. And we've kind of lost our way when it comes to that. Speaking of all of that, listen to this. It's kind of scary for kids. Children's hospitals nationwide will soon be faced with a decision on whether to continue following the guidance of a transgender health group that is expected to lower the age for surgeries to change a person's sex. They want to lower the age. Can you believe that? I've never heard of the group. I don't even know why they're giving it any kind of salute. But the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, WPATH is their acronym, has yet to release its much-anticipated report, which will lower age recommendations for things like breast removal down to 15 years of age. Can you believe that? Genital surgery down to 17 years of age. How about you figure out that if it's an adult that wants to do it, that's up to them. But don't do it on kids. No matter if they're begging for it, don't do it. Don't do it. Kids haven't matured and grown up yet. It's so crazy. I don't even want to talk further about it.
Is there an age limit on getting a tattoo?
That's a good question. I've never gotten a tattoo. I don't think so, but I may be wrong. I mean, maybe there is. Maybe there is, because I would think, I don't know. You know, it's a good question to go into a tattoo parlor and ask them that sometime.
Well, because, if there is, you would need parental consent for a tattoo, right?
I guess, if you came in with some sort of a note. I mean, you know, most of these tattoo parlors, frankly, I don't think that. If you were a 7-year-old and came in, I think they would be concerned, right? But if you were like 15 or 16, wouldn't they do a tattoo on you? I don't know. It's a good question, Ed. It really is.
These kids today look a lot older than they did when I was in school.
Yeah.
So,
especially with the tattoo.
I mean, because
yeah.
So you want to lower the age to 15 or 17 or whatever for this surgery.
Yeah, to have your breast removed because you want to become a man, and you could be 15 years of age and make that. I don't think so.
Tattoo you. I'm pretty sure there is an 18 and over on a tattoo.
Yeah, well, I hope you're right. I do.
Let's check on that.
Yeah, we will check on that. So, anyway, I mean, this whole thing about the inculcation of all of this into kids, you know, let them grow up. Come on, let them grow up. They don't need that kind of thing. There's enough trouble, social pressure and everything else. Throwing this into the mix for these kids, I don't think so.
You know, I never had dealt with it in high school, but I could see as I was getting older and my friends had kids and they were going through some of the girls that were just entering high school at 15 and 16-year-old weren't confident about the way their body was developing at a fast enough speed and whether maybe they could get some enhancements done.
Uh-huh.
And parents are totally against that. They're like, listen, wait till you're 18 and wait to see what your body finally finishes developing.
Of course.
You know, it doesn't make sense giving a 14-year-old breast implants.
Of course not.
Or a tummy tuck, or what? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it was unheard of course, when I was growing up, that you would even do that. The closest thing that you ever came to was, and I'll use the word because I don't know if it's even used anymore, but there was always a suspicion that certain girls might have what were called falsies.
Yeah.
To enhance their bust.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
I remember there was this girl, I don't know, I shouldn't even bring this up.
She might be listening.
I was in like 8th grade, and she was very well developed. And now that I think back, I think she was biologically well developed. She happened to be of Spanish origin. Hispanic
origin. I knew girls like that.
But there were a couple of guys that would tease her about wearing falsies. Now that I think back, I don't think she had.
But not at the reunion.
It was terribly cruel. No, not at the reunion.
Hey, baby. You know, I loved you.
All right. So, anyway, let kids grow up. Let kids grow up. You know, they got enough trouble. We don't need to reassign their surgeries when they're 14 and 15 and 16 years old.
I don't think you can even get a kid lap band surgery. If you get an overweight kid, I'm not sure you can even do a lap band. It's too dangerous.
I think it is.
Because your insides haven't developed.
Your body is still developing. Yeah, leave them alone. Exactly. Ed, have you ever heard of this website called Politico?
Yes.
They tend to be liberal.
Yes.
Well, maybe not so much anymore. They got a new owner. It's kind of like CNN. CNN, you know, has a new owner.
I heard that. Is it true? Is it more conservative?
They're going to go, not necessarily conservative, but more middle of the road.
Okay.
I mean, come on. CNN's been a far left network for years.
Yeah.
All right. And now they're starting to fire people at CNN that were really way over on the left.
Speaking of fired, you know who's resurfaced? Cuomo.
Oh, really? Which one?
The younger one. The reporter.
The non-governor.
Yes.
What's he doing?
News something. It's not Newsmax.
Oh, no.
It's News.
How would it be Newsmax?
It's not, I don't think it's News Nation. It's something like News World or something like that, starting in October.
Okay.
I don't know if he's going to have his hard left-wing attitude. I don't know.
Do you think he'll bring his older brother? His older brother's looking for work.
Well, it's going to be in October, just in time for the primaries.
Okay. Well,
not the primaries, but the...
Getting back to Politico, they got a new owner. His name is, let's find it. He's a German guy. Dofner is his last name. Let's see here. Talks about him and his business philosophy. He apparently was a supporter of Donald Trump. So that is scaring some of the liberals. Now he's going to take over Politico. And he said, we want to prove that being nonpartisan is actually the more succeeding positioning. In other words, you can make money being middle of the road. You know, CNN at one time, I thought was fairly, way, way back, fairly, you know, when Turner started it, a lot less partisan.
You mean that concept of actually reporting the news instead of giving us your interpretation of the news?
Right.
Wow, what a concept.
Yeah, like the Walter Cronkite, as I would say, the Walter Cronkite days, where you wouldn't be able to tell the guy was one way or the other, you know?
And you know what? Those people never discussed their political views.
I know.
They never did.
I used to think Walter Cronkite was a conservative. It turned out he was very liberal. And I used to think he was conservative when I used to watch him. So he really did a good job, in my opinion, of being non-political. Anyway, this guy, Dofner, is now the CEO, and he was the subject of a lengthy piece in the Washington Post, which tried to delve into his business and political philosophy. And apparently they found some statement that he made in an email, I guess. Let's see, an email he had sent at some point before the 2020 election, quote, do we all want to get together for an hour in the morning on November 3rd and pray that Donald Trump will again become president of the United States of America? So apparently he was a Trump supporter. Let's see here. So anyway, Politico is joining CNN and kind of moving more towards the middle. I think that's good news. I think that's very good news. Hey, this is interesting. If we still had our buddy Andrew the Master Barber calling in all the time, DeSantis, Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, has agreed only to one debate so far with Charlie Crist. Crist wants a whole bunch of debates, apparently. Well, you know, it's always the underdog that wants more debates. Let's be honest. If you're the guy that's ahead, you don't want to make any mistakes in a debate forum. So Charlie Crist, of course, is demanding more debates. I don't disagree. But Governor DeSantis so far has agreed to one debate on a West Palm Beach TV station. It's going to be on October the 12th. But he turned down one on apparently a larger broadcast on October the 20th. Let's see here. So this is a communications director for Charlie Crist. Ron DeSantis is refusing to go up against Charlie Crist on the largest debate stage with the most viewers because he's scared to answer one of the biggest questions on voters' minds. He doesn't want millions of Floridians watching as he is forced to defend his anti-choice, anti-freedom agenda.
I'll debate you, Charlie. Give me a call. You mean Charlie wants to...
Because
Charlie was against it before he was for it.
And DeSantis has not said he won't have more debates. He just turned down this one particular debate for him. That's all. But I do want to see. I will pay. I would pay to see that debate between Ron and Charlie.
I would, too.
I really do. I'd be very interested. All right.
By the way, yeah. Chris Cuomo is joining News Nation starting October 3rd.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of him.
Yeah, and he will be on the same channel that has Dan Abrams.
Dan Abram. Yeah, yes. I remember Dan Abram.
He was the guy that hosted Live PD.
Okay.
What a great show that was.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see if he's going to still have his far left wing attitude, because that station's more in the middle. I watched it for a few minutes.
They might temper him a little bit. Yeah. They might temper him a little bit. Okay. Well, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, among other things, we're going to talk a little bit about Nancy Pelosi. If she doesn't remain in the speakership, she might become an ambassador, and we'll tell you where they want to send her.
When I wake up in the morning, love.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back for the final segment of Freedom Works on a Wednesday, and we thank you so very much for being with us. By the way, we are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, on the great Tantalk Radio Network, and we are so glad you have taken a moment to listen. However, if you are not available, thanks to Big Ed, all of our shows are put on podcast, and you can go to our website and listen to them anytime. You can listen to them at 3 in the morning. It might be a good cure for insomnia. Just go to OurFreedomWorks.com, O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. Click on the podcast button at the top. Ed's got all our shows, most recent one at the very front. You'll see the guest. You'll see the top 10. And you can just take your time. It's got a pause button. You can listen, go in, get a drink, come back and listen again. OurFreedomWorks.com. Okay, so Ed, if Nancy Pelosi, who I know you love, she's already planning her next move after an expected Republican victory here in November. So if she's not Speaker of the House, I was pretty sure she wasn't going to hang around anyway. But she apparently wants an ambassadorship,
mm-hmm.
and she wants Biden to nominate her. I want you to guess the country she wants to become an ambassador to.
Smirnoff Vodka.
She wants to become the ambassador to Russia. Yeah. I never thought of that. She'd love it in Moscow in January.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Mm-hmm.
Her teeth would be chattering. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't be in her mouth, but they would be chattering.
Yeah.
Nope, you're wrong. Think about her heritage. And that's a big clue.
You know what? The less I know about Nancy Pelosi is probably the better.
All right. Well, I'll get through the story very quickly then. She wants to become the ambassador to Italy. God. She wants to become the ambassador to Italy. And apparently, Biden has failed to fill the ambassadorship to Italy so far. What's she waiting for?
What is she, 87? Well, how old is she?
About 82, I would say. I think she's a couple of years older than Biden.
Isn't it time for her to grab the TV guide and the remote and
I think it's time for
watch
her to,
reruns and stuff?
I think it's time for her to grab her walker and just shuffle away over the horizon, if you want to know the truth. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. Now, before we get to our top 10, we have a good one, I think. Top 10 most stressful commutes if you're a driver, you know, rush hour and all that kind of thing. Where would you think it would be? But before we get to that, Ed, I am just tickled pink to see how well our beloved Tampa Bay Rays are doing in baseball. They took 2 out of 3 from the Yankees. And the Yankees at one point were dominating. I mean, they were so far ahead.
At one time, they were 14 games ahead of the Rays. That's since now been cut down to 4.5.
Wow. Well, it's looking good for them for the Rays to be in the playoffs.
Well, here's the thing. They took 2 of 3 of them over the weekend. They've won the last 2 against Boston. They have another one tonight.
Wow.
If they can, now the Yankees have a doubleheader.
And they're up at Boston.
No, they're here.
They're here, okay.
So the Yankees have a doubleheader because he got rained out last night. So they have a doubleheader today. If they can lose one of those 2 and the Rays win tonight, they'll cut that to 3.
Yeah.
Then they're going to go ahead to New York for a weekend series of 3 games. Things could get interesting.
How many games approximately do you think they have left to play?
What is We've it, got most 30, of 30 some odd games?
Yeah,
something like that.
Maybe that many? Yeah. Okay. So they got plenty of time. They could win the division.
Sure they could. Yeah. They could.
Wow.
It's not far-fetched to go up there and sweep the Yankees. It's not far-fetched.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do that, then they're tied.
Wow. Let's get over to the fact that we're about to go into tomorrow night, the opening NFL game.
Yeah.
And as I understand it, our beloved Tampa Bay Buccaneers are playing Sunday night.
Yeah. That's when the league is officially going to open.
Sunday.
Yeah, that'll be 9/11, which just, I don't know. This one bothers me.
Oh, it's September 11th. You think they shouldn't? Mm. Well, they've got to.
I just don't know. With all that's going on with the border and being open.
Are you worried?
I am, because there's going to be hundreds of thousands of fans in stands. And the borders being open the way it is, and we could be looking the other way with all that's going on and with what we've got with Biden and his stuff.
Well, I would imagine local places where the football stadiums are aware of that.
Yeah, but it's not like it was. I mean, you used to get pretty much wanded down. They don't do that much anymore. No, they may reinstall it and that's not. I don't worry about somebody slipping in a gun. You know, that's. You know, you worry about that big event, something, you know, who knows what they can scare up.
They might have it also, speaking of all of that, do you think they might have some tribute during some of these games to the
I'm sure there will be. Yeah. I mean, it has to be. It's 9/11. So.
Well, let's keep our... By the way, who are the Bucks playing Sunday night?
They will be at Dallas Sunday night.
Oh, that'll be an interesting
8:00.
Game. Okay. All right, it's time for our top 10, and I think this is very interesting. The top 10 most stressful U.S. commutes. It comes from a group called Resume.io.
We're talking states or cities?
Most stressful U.S. commutes in a certain city.
Okay.
Cities, yeah.
Okay.
All right. So here we go. Top 10 most stressful U.S. commutes per city. Number 10, Arlington, Virginia. And I can believe it. You know, that's a real mess with all those different... political things going on around Washington, D.C. It says here that 39% of tweets regarding commutes there show signs of stress. I don't know how they do it, but it's based on commute-themed tweets showing signs of stress. I should have said.
So you're not supposed to tweet and drive.
I guess. But maybe they pull over or after the commute is over with, they respond.
Yeah. Hell, hang on, honey. I got to pull over and tweet.
Yeah. I don't know how they did the tweeting.
Yeah.
But it was tweets that came into the site and they came. All right. Anyway, number 9. San Antonio. I wouldn't have thought San Antonio was that. But 39% of the tweets, commute-themed tweets, showed signs of stress in San Antonio. Number 8. Santa Clarita, California. Well, I think anywhere around San Francisco, San Diego, or Los Angeles, you're going to have stress with your commute. 39.4% stress-themed tweets. Number 7, Boston, Mass. Well, just going around Boston is a mess anyway. None of those streets go straight. You ever been to Boston? It is. You can't get there from here kind of thing, you know? 40.3% stress tweets. Number 6, Columbia, South Carolina. That surprised me. I didn't think it was that busy there, anywhere in South Carolina. Number five, Cleveland, Ohio. Yeah, 40.78% stress-themed tweets. All right, number four. I've been here, and I can believe it. It's right near San Francisco, Concord, California, where they have the wine growing and all
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, beautiful area. But 42% stress-themed tweets around there. Number three, Jersey City, New Jersey. Ah, sure, why am I not surprised? Mm-hmm. That's right at the... That's a hub of New York City area.
Right.
And, you know, you come through, I think, the Lincoln Tunnel and all that nonsense. Anyway, 43.4% stress-themed tweets. Number two. Now, this one shocked me, especially being second. Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Baton Rouge.
Yeah. Would you ever think that that was a stressful commute?
I've never
been there, but why?
Maybe they just got a lot of traffic.
I can't believe
it. I figured New York would be in there somewhere.
Yeah, but Baton Rouge, Louisiana? Number two? Ha! All right. Here we go. Roll the drum, Ed. What do you think is number one?
Let's go with Los Angeles, California.
Excellent guess. You actually just mentioned it. It's New York City.
Oh.
New York City, 45.09% of the commute theme tweets showed signs of stress.
Well, then
I can believe that.
Well, I'm surprised L.A.'s not in there.
Yeah, L.A. is not, but I mentioned Santa. I know. You know what? I think this, let's be honest, I think this poll has no relevance
whatsoever.
Well,
you got people tweeting and driving in that poll.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I never even heard of resume.io, but I thought it was an interesting topic, but I don't buy it. I think L.A. had to be number one. Don't you?
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with you on that one. I think New York would be up there. Top two or three. I think Chicago wasn't mentioned. I know how bad it is.
Yeah.
And Atlanta. You ever driven through Atlanta?
I have, but I thought they kind of cleaned it up a bit with all the overpasses.
They got about 34 lanes going through there.
Yes, right.
That's what, and they're still crowded.
You really got to pay attention when you're in Atlanta.
I mean, talk about being stressed. Like, what if you're in the far left lane and you got to get off in a quarter mile?
And you got somebody that's yapping next to you and like, shut up, I got to drive.
Exactly. Yeah. The whole thing just scares me. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. We will be back on Friday. In the meantime, drive safely and remember, freedom works. Like the legend of the thing.